Hello, and you are awesome. You're listening to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast, and what we're all about is training smart, performing at peak levels, and staying athletic through the lifespan, being hard to kill, both on the playing field and in the game of life. I'm your host, John Zombro, and it is my great honor to be here today with my co-host, PK. Hello, sir.
Hello. Good morning, Jay-Z. How you living?
Doing well. Like I was mentioning before we went live, Jay-Z's world lately has been filled with beautiful autumn sunshine.
Same here. Yeah, these days are dynamite. I love them. Yeah, it gets cool at night, but it still gets up to, you know, 70s, maybe mid-70s at the highest. And lovely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and I've got some thoughts about fall and autumn. I've got a lot of them. I'll only share a few with you and the audience. But so here we are. This is episode number 150. And today we're going to be talking about training intensity and kind of diving into that a bit. But sort of related to this was a thought I had jumping into my cold tank. I wasn't jumping. I was slithering in. But you know, the cool nights now that we're getting in the 30s, if I fill that up in the evening, it's the water's pretty cold, you know, in the morning, and that's nice. It's refreshing, I must say. And I got in there today, and you know, I was not in there very long at all, probably not even a minute, but you know, I did a quick walk around the block, and then I got in there and I got out, and I was like, oh man, I just feel so effervescent and, you know, zesty and refreshed and all those things. And as I thought about it, yes, we know from research that cold exposure has all these benefits, these biological, physiological benefits. And there, sometimes I guess I might be going for those, but I think lately I've just been going for the psychological benefit. And it's this: I know it's cold, but I know I can do hard things. And so I just get in, bam, it's done, and I'm getting out. So I'm probably not staying long enough to get all those other things happening. But it just feels like, man, I have set up the day or finished it, depending on when I'm doing it, with a success. And hey, sometimes that's all we need, just the little things.
Okay, I like it. So you're saying you're getting a win. You set your mind, you said, I'm going to do something that's hard to do, and then you do it.
Yeah, and it probably does have some relationship as we talk about training, because, you know, in my mind, you know, I could almost say that, gosh, it's almost overwhelming to think about all those benefits of cold exposure and, you know, how long I need to stay or how cold it needs to be and what's going to happen. But on the very front end, it's kind of like, look, just, you know, just get in there, just do the thing. And wow, okay, got something out of it. And I think that's also very true with training and working out. You know, sometimes we have to, you know, talk to, you know, our friends or family or clients and say, well, look, all this stuff we cooked up is sort of ideal, or at least we think it is. It looks good on paper. But in reality, you know, if you just do something, do some of it, that's way better than not doing it. And so, just a thought that fall brought to me because it cooled the water down.
Is that a new catchphrase that one of these sneaker companies are going to steal from you? Just do something.
The ship has sailed.
Yeah, John, I'm really not teasing, because I think that that's a, or I am teasing, but I, yeah. What I mean is I do it in jest, because I think that's a really good point. And I also think that what you just laid out there is like, okay, if you're approaching your tank and you said, all right, I need to be in there for 3 minutes to get the, you know, and you are very sort of prescribed about it and rigid, then I think that you would miss the sort of the opportunity to get what you got out of it when you said, hey, I'm just accomplishing something. So I think that overall, that's a good mindset to adopt when you're, or to have to get to find these unexpected benefits.
Agreed, brother. It's the upside. So, you know, so I've got some things about what's up with the tribe, the training tribe, T2 today. Well, this week we're launching a new month of training. We're in the endurance block, which is the fall block that we've got for September, October, November. It's cool because October is a 5-weeker. And we're still dosing, on agility and speed and strength and power, but we're doing some things to build endurance. And this week we're working on unilateral exercise patterns with both elastics and weights, along with some interval and steady state work. It's pretty awesome.
Really? Okay. I like that. So okay, shift gears in October. So the focus is endurance, but you're still dosing a little bit in those other areas as well.
Yeah. And it's just kind of fun because we live in the middle, you know, with this training tribe model. It's not the same thing all year, which could eventually get boring or dry and, you know, not maybe cause enough adaptation, but it's not absolutely new and different every day. Which has its downsides as well. It's kind of in between. You know, we get some new things. We kind of work on them, achieve some mastery, look at movement as a skill, and then develop all those capacities of the athletic beast. You know, obviously strength, speed, power, endurance, and agility. I'm going to try to make that into one word someday, you know, perhaps an acronym, who knows, but yeah, it's just fun. And so I'm doing most of the stuff that the group has because I think that's important. You know, you have to have some cred as a coach, and also it helps me to really feel, where we need to adjust and fine tune and just relate to the comments that the group's making.
Got it. I love it. It sounds tasty.
Yeah, and so that brings us to intensity now because we masterclassed on it just the other day. So they have a weekly masterclass as part of the Training Tribe experience where we get together in a Zoom meeting and do Q&A on anything that's related to the program, but I also do a brief presentation on an important topic. You know, last week we did that breakdown of the squat, so it was very, activity involved, but this one was more didactic, talking about intensity. And I'd say this, intensity is one of those parameters of training that's just extremely valuable to understand and appreciate.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Carry on. Don't let me stop.
Yeah. Well, as always, you know, this episode is brought to you by the Lifetime Athletes Coaching and Training Services. So if you need to specialize in a sport goal or a health project, one-on-one coaching is the ticket. And if you want to get into a research-based, effective, and fun training system, the tribe might be for you. Or you might be worthy of the tribe. Perhaps I'll say it that way, slice and dice. Just go to thelifetimeathlete.com and explore coaching or training tribe menu items. And if you like this concept of athletic fitness and you want to perform at your highest potential through the lifespan, it might be a great fit. TLA might not quite be a revolution, but it's definitely a friggin' party.
I like it. Sounds good. Yeah. And again, if you're listening and you're interested, where can they find all that information?
TheLifetimeAthlete.com.
Excellent. So today we're talking about intensity.
Yes. And I'm smacking my lips because I'm just sipping some coffee. I should begin by defining intensity. And I'd say this, it's simply effort. It's how hard you do or go.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And you and I, and on the pod previously, we have talked about it, but let's get a little deeper into that. I think I'm going to have a follow-up after you go further.
Yes. The intensity is when we're rating the intensity of a workout, it's the main focus of the session. So even if we're blending multiple intensities, like in effect, if the workout emphasizes something hard stuff, intervals, lifts, whatever, it's a hard workout. And that's how the session is labeled. Everything else just fills in around it. And that's either preparatory or accessory. Mm-hmm. Intensity. Now this is really going to be a cool one, I think, for our audience. It's really an intrinsic measure. Again, because it's how hard, you know, you're generating the intensity. But we can often correlate it to extrinsic monitoring because output of different types will, you know, oftentimes have a very strong association to intensity. So for example, heart rate is a measure of intensity that's intrinsic. It's the body, you know, the heart's beating at a certain rate to produce a certain output, whatever it is you're doing. And then what's really popular, let's say, in the cycling world is looking at watts. So watts are a measure of power, a measure of output, but they correlate quite well to the intensity that the athlete's generating.
Yeah, and I think that I'm glad you brought the heart rate up because, you know, I was doing an interval workout, so sprinting on a bicycle, and I had my heart rate monitor on, and I remember that, you know, you designed the workout for me, and it was, you know, a series of intervals, but one was go, you know, go 85% of your max. And I did the workout, and then when we talked about it afterward, I was talking about going 85% of my max heart rate, and you really, I had misinterpreted what the design of the program was, because, you know, the way that you phrased it to me, and forgive me if I'm not 100% spot on here, but you said it's not 85% of your max heart rate, it's 85% of your max effort. So it's more your perception of how hard you're going as opposed to that number. So that really sort of helped me think about intensity in a different way, because it's yourself, and if you're obviously trying to be honest, then you can get that without, you can use the tools, but you can also get that just from like knowing yourself and thinking about how hard you're going.
Yeah, and I should probably clarify a bit, because you made what you were describing was a very common, I don't even want to call it error, I would just say common association. And it's really this: with short intervals, let's say 30 seconds or less, possibly even up to a minute or less, why heart rate is not a valid measure is because the heart rate takes a little bit of time to come up and stabilize. Mm-hmm. So for longer intervals or steady state work, heart rate is a perfect mirror of intensity. But for short stuff, it's all about effort, and heart rate has almost like a lagging presentation. And so that's really the only thing to think about there. So that's why I try to clarify. I should have done a better job as your coach, back in the day.
But I think I just like that. So, okay, so we've defined it, how hard you're going, you're thinking about that. Why is it important?
It may actually be the most important workout variable for this reason, because how hard you go has potentially the strongest relationship to specific types of adaptation within your organism. And also, it can have the highest potential to break your beast down if it's used unwisely or inappropriately. So I would say this, but when you're looking at intensity, the dose makes the poison. Mana can become kryptonite.
Oh, okay. So you need it to get the gains and adapt, but if you give yourself too much of it and you're not careful, if you overdose, that's when you start going too far and breaking yourself down.
Yes, with intensity, underdosing, you know, you don't always get results, but it usually has no significant consequences. But overdosing can be exceedingly deleterious.
Wow, well said. Okay.
Oh, it's all the right. Coffee. Okay, so now what I've got is a great challenge for myself because I shared this with you. I think you might be looking at as well, but I have a little table that I use to present on exercise or training intensity. And in concept, it's actually a bit simpler than it looks. And so to describe that for the audience, first of all, I would say, intensity is rated in numbers of ways across sport, and we can kind of pull how any sport or exercise or training type can use a similar scale. So, you know, first I want to say that, and then I'd say what's very popular in many training circles, and particularly those that look at aerobic training or endurance training, is using the zone-based model. Some of that was based on good research several decades ago. And there are multiple zone-based models out there, 5, 6, 7, 10. And so I'm just going to use a 5-zone model to describe, and then I'm going to go ahead and try to relate it to other metrics of intensity so that no matter what sport you're in, you kind of have this idea that, oh, I could rate, if I wanted to, my intensity on a level of 1 to 5.
Got it.
So that was, you know, I'm pulling teeth here. I'm trying to make sure this comes out clearly, but I would say this, if we go from lowest to highest, zone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the emphasis that zone 1 training typically fosters is recovery because it's super easy in the athlete. When we go to zone 2, and again, I'll use some of the like aerobic training terms, but we'll relate these to others later. You're building endurance. You're in that zone where zone 2, 2 out of 5, where, you know, your body is primarily burning fat for fuel, oxidizing that in the presence of oxygen, thus aerobic exercise. And you're, you know, you're getting your fitness development and various enzymatic and capillary changes within the muscles and, the heart's pumping out blood, and your body is getting more efficient at using it. So then we go to number 3, zone 3, which, you know, again, people will split this up a little differently. It's often called a tempo zone. It's the middle zone. It's mid-range, middle gear, moderately challenging effort, tends to bracket the anaerobic or lactate threshold data. So just to be kind of clear here, the main difference between anaerobic threshold and lactate threshold is that anaerobic threshold is measured in the lab, via gas exchange. So people are wearing a mask, and you see those people with the, you know, the face mask on the treadmill or the bike. If you sample the lactate level in the blood, that's where this whole lactate threshold comes from. And as opposed to being a super finite point, like anything in biology, it tends to have this range. And so nowadays it's popular to call, to define the range by the first lactate threshold and the second lactate threshold. And that roughly correlates with 2 millimoles per liter of lactate in the blood up to 4.0. We don't have to be that precise, but what happens in that mid-range zone in the aerobic training realm is we're really improving the efficiency of our body to use a buffer, use as a fuel this lactate, and, you know, just kind of get a little bit more efficient in the presence of it. But we're not really going to the higher levels, which I'll talk about in a moment, where production is rapidly exceeding clearance.
Gotcha. Okay.
Whew, that was a lot. I shouldn't have said that much. I'm sorry. Okay. Now the next one up, just using the 5-zone model, we might call it a capacity level, and it certainly approaches more of like, say, the VO2 max or maximal oxygen uptake level that a person can produce. So that's higher work. It's definitely producing more lactate. It's pretty close to all out, but not quite, because we reserve all out or maximal effort for zone 5. And that's really something that isn't sustainable for long durations and sometimes not even multiple reps. So having gone through that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, from easiest to hardest, we work recovery, endurance, tempo, capacity, and a maximal thing. So, you know, if I jump around, say, well, don't even worry about the types of training. We'll talk about those in a moment, but you can also use the RPE model or the rate of perceived exertion scale. It's actually quite valid. And this goes back to that intrinsic stuff we were discussing. It's like, originally there was a 17-point scale that went from 6 to 20 called the Borg scale. And it looked at, you know, giving a number to if you're laying down sleeping up to, you know, all out flipping the burning car. And it works, but also the societies we live in love these multiples of 10. So it got simplified down. So, okay, let's just use 1 to 10. And, you know, there you go. There's the extrapolation. But, you know, if you're in zone 1, that's kind of a 5 to 6 RPE. Zone 2 is a 6-7, zone 3-7-8, zone 4-8-9, and zone 5-9-10. So you're just thinking like on a 10 scale, what am I putting out? And I always color code these things too. So it goes blue, green, yellow, orange, red. So obviously red zone, you can picture what that's like.
Absolutely. Excuse me.
Now I trickle along and say, okay, well, let's look at these measures that some athletes like to use, particularly in the locomotive sports. And so talking about things like cycling and swimming and triathlon and rowing and I'm sure I'm leaving some out, running. Well, you can look at percent of max heart rate, and that has a pretty strong correlation to each of these five zones. And also it's popular to use percentages of the lactate threshold or percentages of the functional threshold power, which, you know, is a test that you can do to kind of extrapolate your levels, or percent of VO2 max. So the exact percentages will vary based on, again, what we're talking about, but roughly, especially if we're looking at heart rate, we might say zone one, you know, you're under 60%, zone two, under 70%, zone three, for most of us, except for elite athletes, under 80. Zone four spans a little bit greater, it goes about 80 to 95. And then when we get talking about heart rate, when you're doing those max efforts, we sort of just throw it out and say, well, you know, it's not applicable. Two more things to talk about. First of all, then there's percent of maximum speed or velocity or power, you know. So if we've got something that we can measure, like, okay, we know that, you know, on the track you move at 10 meters per second. Okay, so that 10 is a great number, because now we know if you're working at 80% of that, you know, you're moving at 0.08 meters per second. Or did I say 10? Oh yeah, it'd be 8 meters per second. Sorry about that. I was looking at this chart and all these zeros and things. I got myself confused. But yeah, so you can do a percentage of that. And you can also look at intensity by saying, okay, what are your reps in reserve? So this is really useful in weight training. It's pretty popular these days. You finish a set and, you know, let's say, you know, you probably go to complete and total utter failure. So zero is left, and you really, everyone knows what that's like. Well, that's a max effort. And if you did one or two, or you had one or two repetitions in reserve left, that's probably like a zone four or, you know, that kind of thing. Zone three might be, well, now I've got three or four reps left in the tank and so forth. But you can use that as a way to recommend training, sometimes just to support more elaborate things like, oh, well, we want you to use X percentage of your one rep max for this, that, and the other. But to really ballpark it fast, you can just say, give me an RIR of two.
Yes. And I think with all of these, and I encourage you, if you want to see this, I know, John, that you're going to have something on the Lifetime Athlete if you want to look at the chart. But looking at it, I think that no matter what your exercise, your training is, or your discipline is, there's a way to gauge your intensity. And I think that that's, you know, especially when you're describing the last version, the reps in reserve, if you're not thinking about that, if you're not, you know, if you are strength training and lifting weights and you're not thinking about your intensity, then you're missing out, I think, is another thing that I'm taking away from this. Because if, you know, you do have more than six reps in reserve, but you're only getting into the zone two, so you're not really taking it to that, you're not getting the gains. In other words, the dose is too low.
Yeah, precisely. And I think that's where understanding intensity can be so valuable. And it's kind of funny, almost, I'm not trying to be overly wily with our listeners, but having gone through that, even though it's five things, and when you can look at it, it seems fairly simple. It's still, doggone it, it's still kind of complicated, just to be honest.
It is.
And that's why I'm gonna simplify it and just let you know that ahead of time. Also, if you, as PK alluded to, if you want to look at these tables, they are available on the website under the WISE system. And so that WISE is WISE, Workload Impact Systemic Evaluation. It's a system that I've developed that I use this quantification of intensity within that with all my athletes. And you can find that by going to the media menu item, and Media's got three choices. It's got this podcast, it's got the blog, it's got the YouTube channel. So under the blog, this article can be found. If you want to go faster, just go to any page. There's a search bar. Just type in Wise System and it'll pop up. So yeah, you want to make sure you've got that. Well, very, very briefly, I'll just touch on, you know, this ever-evolving terminology that I use for the types of training that we do. So we know we have those five capacities of human performance. They're well recognized. And so that's agility, endurance, strength, power, and speed. And you can put them in any order. So it's dynamic athletic training that builds agility. It's mostly low intensity steady state that builds endurance, although we can get it other ways. Resistance training for strength and muscular hypertrophy, high intensity interval and repetition training for power, and then sprinting or maximum velocity extended rest training for speed. And so that's what we're labeling. You know, so if you have a workout that's coming up and, you know, it's a strength workout, it's a resistance training workout, and maybe that's a day where you're gonna go for a max 1 RM, or you're going to take some sets to failure, it's probably a 4 or 5 in this 5-zone model. That's probably all I need to say.
Absolutely.
So now let's give consideration to the model also that's in the WISE system that I use to quantify intensity for my lifetime athletes.
And let's hear it.
This is an interesting one, because I'm going to tell you that the 5-zone model, it's scientifically proven. It's not too difficult to work with. But in spite of that, it almost fails miserably every time with people.
Really? So it's just, it's scientifically proven, but it's hard to apply in the everyday life, in the real world?
It's just too damn much. It's too much information for the mind to process and chunk. It's too big by a factor of two. And so because there are five things, it's tough for people to understand and make choices. There's no character flaw in humans. It's just that, gosh, you know, it's hard to figure out. Was that,
sure,
you know, a 67.4, or was it a 72.9? Ah, you know, and it blows the mind. So what I've been working on for a long time, and obviously this is no surprise to you, PK, but you can kind of compress things a little bit. So what were the zones 1 and 2? They're basically, that's the easy side of training. You know, there's all zone 1 and 2 in terms of intensity, effort applied, you know, that's low. And so I call that level 1. I give it an intensity rating of low, and I give it a color of green. Now, the middle is still the middle. And so that's that area where, you know, it's moderate effort, you know, and so it might be 3 or 4 reps in reserve on those weights, or it might be around the lactate threshold, you know, in some of these other training things. So that's level 2. It's medium, and it's given the color yellow. And then lastly, zones 4 and 5 basically are lumped together. That's high intensity for a color of red. And here's why. The main difference between zone 4 and 5 is just how long you can sustain it. So when you're doing zone 4 work, you're typically doing like these longer reps, you know, potentially of several minutes. Whereas when you're doing zone 5, you know, if it's true zone 5, you know, we're definitely, you know, we're under 20 seconds. And so hard is hard. It's just, if it's extremely hard, it doesn't last as long. And if it's, you know, manageably hard, it might last for a couple minutes. But ultimately, you know, at the very end, you're equally gassed. And that's kind of how that works.
Yeah, and I think that does make sense, especially to sort of see it, but also it's easier to talk about, you know, low, medium, high, 1, 2, 3, especially lumping those two at the high and the low end together, because they're close enough that they can be. That does make sense.
Yeah, and so that's why I use this, because it's a simplification. It's easy for both the athlete and the coach to gauge training and then to communicate effectively. And it removes all that hair splitting minutia which historically has confused and frustrated really all but the most geeky and disciplined individuals. You know, if you only got three choices, it's one, two, or three, and use a stoplight analogy, green, yellow, or red. It makes it easy. And I guess in defense of the people for whom the five zone model works really well, it's this. Probably, again, the people who are into really heavily into cycling and some running. I mean, that whole, you know, endurance athlete genre likes the zones. But in order for it to work, you have to have that personality where you, mm-hmm. you're a spreadsheet person. You love data. You love tracking and manipulating it. You want to actually talk with your coach every day and discuss and debate, and you are super dedicated. You don't miss workouts, you know, all that stuff. That's who zone five or five zones works for. If you're kind of like most of the rest of us, like, yeah, you know, you try, but you know, life happens and you're kind of here and there, a little bit more general, not quite as militaristic, three level model trumps the five zone every time.
Yeah, and I think that if you like that first person, you probably already found the five level and are using it. And if this is if you're thinking about your intensity in your workouts and you haven't incorporated it yet, then you're probably in the latter group like the rest of us.
Yeah, and then here's like the most amazing thing about all this. So we went through and we purposely, or maybe not so purposely, made the five sound confusing and tried to make the three sound simple, but you know, a few years ago, someone might have said, well, how does research support this work or support this approach? And I probably would have had some answers I could pull from, but now I can say very well, particularly in the endurance world. And a lot of that's because of recent publications in the last couple of years that have been put out by Steven Seiler and his group. He's over in he's an American, but he's in Norway. And so he's a PhD exercise physiologist doing studies. That's his area of specialization, is intensity of training in elite endurance athletes. And what he has basically come to show is that not only is this, I call it, you know, I was working on this before I became aware of his research. I call it a three-level model. He just trims it down to three zones. It's not only almost as good or just as good as the five, it actually might even be better, because it just clearly captures what the lead athletes are doing. And so his research has been very extensive, studying elite Nordic skiers, obviously in Scandinavia, rowers, runners. He's done several studies with the elite Kenyan groups, cyclists of all levels. And what he has found is this, that almost entirely all elite athletes do about 80 to 85% of their total training volume through the year as level one, as easy work.
Interesting.
Then they do a smallish amount, you know, 15 to 20% of the other two intensity zones, with most of that being made up of level three or the highest intensity red zone work, with very little of the yellow or, you know, level two kind of medium effort type of training. And the reason being is that what they found is that level two training, again, just clarifying, that would be level two, zone three from that other model, has for the most part found to be not that useful in terms of risk reward when it's done too often. So there's a place for every type of training, and that training has a place, but it only needs to be trained a few times per month to get the benefits. And more of level two, that middle, is not necessarily better.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So the take-home message from Seiler's work, and especially when we're talking about endurance athletics, is if you're looking at the three levels of intensity, go easy most of the time. But when it's time to go hard, actually do that, but in a smart way. I mean, obviously, there's always an intelligent way to train. And, you know, when we're talking about you know, lifting and jumping and sprinting and all that sort of work, or just intervals that are very pressing. You know, we build up to the ability to do that. We warm up properly, get good coaching in terms of technique, you know, all of that. But that's really the message. The bulk of training, you know, for essentially the fastest people in the world is that they go slow relative to their abilities.
And we've talked about, they also included in that, I'm assuming, is that they're excellent at recovering. They're great at resting. They rest hard as well.
Oh yeah. In fact, that's another one of the things, the intelligent training, you know, obviously lots of easy and then going big when it's time to, that's a sign of the elite athlete. And then also this value and appreciation for a rest and recovery. They've mastered it. And those are really some of the training related characteristics that define champions from, let's say, the also rans. Finally, this is practically talking about that, you know, that distribution of between green and red that we were just discussing. It's practically the opposite way that most recreational athletes train. This has been a source of frustration and argument and challenge for me for decades, but a lot of recreational athletes, many of them live in that middle zone. And they tend to achieve mediocre results, but they just can't get out of it. You know, I've been sharing some of this guy, Dr. Seiler's research and other people. I've been sharing it with folks to help them because the proof is there. You know, every Olympian and world champion is showing the way. I got to tell a lot of people, stop trying to do it wrong. You know, and here's why that happens. Most folks don't believe, they can't believe that going easy a lot is beneficial, and they're trying to get some catharsis or stress relief, or they're seeking exhaustion. They got to have that sweat. They want to get, quote unquote, their ass kicked. And so they end up doing that, but it's not easy enough to facilitate, you know, developing the connective tissues or the aerobic system without too much stress and inflammation. So you're not quite getting that stimulus, but it's also too hard to facilitate good recovery. So then if they ever have a time when they need to actually go hard, that they can't because, they're a little tired from just living in the middle all the time. And, you know, Malcolm in the middle is not the way, to achieve excellence in peak performance.
Well, and I do think that you touched on it there. It's if you're in the middle, and I think for that recreational athlete, it really isn't looking for peak performance or perceive that. It is the exercise is fulfilling another goal as opposed to specifically trying to you know, get that similar high performance in an event. It's very interesting, and I think that you said something there that I wrote down some notes just now. Not easy enough when you're going easy, when you're in the middle, it's not easy enough to really help the body develop those connective tissues and all the stuff happening behind the scenes without creating inflammation. That's interesting. Specifically, maybe that's a topic I want to circle back to, but before we'll wrap this one, we'll keep going on this one. My question is, when we're thinking about intensity, how does it apply when you're looking at speed and power sports and team sports and weight training? So let's take it just another layer deeper through that lens.
Yes, and there is research to support using this model, but I would say they're the variations of kind of a three-level model that has a lot of easy and a little bit of hard. They're used by most of the best across sport. It's just the mixology starts to get more complex, again, because we're dealing now with lots of different types of athletes in different types of scenarios. So whenever they're targeting speed or power or strength, maybe even agility, the frequency of intensity exposure goes up generally in these training programs, but the duration comes down. So in reality, a lot of those athletes, they're training more frequently with their intensity, but when you go back and bar graph it up, you're going to see that the volumes are very similar to what the endurance folks are doing, because you know, biology is biology. And so the human adapts as an organism fairly consistently across all activity or movement. And that's probably not surprising to hear.
No, not at all.
And here's the one of the great messages of today as well. Doing that was what Seiler calls polarized training. So in other words, you're doing all kinds of training, but more of it is green and a little bit of it is red, just a smidge of yellow. Well, this may be the only, or at least the very best way to train for peak performance and not wreck your health in the process. So that it's just, to me, that's just such a powerful message where we've got all these examples. And, you know, you look at people who say, well, you can't have peak performance without sacrificing your health. I think a lot of that may be because they're not using the appropriate training model, the right management of inflammation, rest and recovery cycles, et cetera.
Absolutely. And I'm assuming now that if you take that into account, something we've talked about a lot is that we're all a little bit different. So how do we account for that, the differences in our unique persons?
Yeah, I'm going to use an example here. It's from Animal Fit. So that's my, research-based body typing system, and it helps a person understand their unique genetics and, you know, not only just feel good about yourself, but also know how to train yourself a little bit better. So you need to be beast specific, respecting your genetics and your history. And so if I use you for an example, PK, you know, you're that combination of panther first, bear second. So that makes you a Wolverine, you know, in the Animal Fit model. Folks, if you'd like to learn more about that, check out the ebook available at thelifetimeathlete.com. So you actually, your beast, your inner beast prefers a generally large amount of higher intensity work. And so we build that in. The bar graphs won't look too different between, say, you and I, but you're going to get away with, actually benefit from a little bit more of the red and yellow columns than say I would. So me as a coyote first, panther second, that makes me a wolf. I can tolerate a moderate amount of intensity and get something out of it. More so than some people, but certainly not as much as you. And so then I start knowing how to, okay, there's that general model from the polarized model that Seiler and others have been observing. And I say, okay, well, within you and I, you know, we might tweak those a little bit, experiment till we get the best result. And that's how you do it. You have to find your sweet spot and figure out what makes you feel and perform your best. And when you get that right, the fit of the kind of training that's for meeting you where you're at right now, man, it's awesome. You don't get hurt. You feel great and you perform magnificently.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I think that probably, you know, listeners are saying, John, what are some tips that I can use to best, I guess, take advantage of intensity in my training?
I'd say this: gain an appreciation of the three levels of intensity, easy, medium, and hard, and learn your ranges in your sports and exercises. Just figure out what is easy, medium, and hard for you, and then you can start to see how these things distribute when your training is going best. Next up, I'd say learn to do this. It's not easy, but learn to go relatively low intensity most of the time. Now low intensity is not no intensity. I don't want to confuse folks there. You're still working, and that's important. You're just working in a way that's very comfortable, very manageable, and that's true whether you're under load with a weight bar or you're out on your bike. And that is not being weak or lazy. It's actually being smart. It's relative though. Easy is still quality work. You're just not revving the red line. And so that's second tip. I would say embrace it. Now, occasionally, there's the opposite of it. And I've always been an advocate for this. I'm sort of known for it. Push it in your training. The beast is durable, or it can be if you train it properly. And use a little bit of yellow, but even a bit more of red from time to time. Let's say a couple times a week for some of us. like 1 to 3, for example. Mm-hmm. Like for me, 1 to 2 is probably where I'm at. If I do true red training, high intensity work, I am not able to do 3 good workouts like that a week anymore. I probably shouldn't have even been doing it when I was younger. Probably would have gotten better results. But nonetheless, my message is challenge yourself. Find an absorbable stimulus and really get into it, and then recover like a pro until you're ready to do it again. And that's really the magic of training.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think that's a theme that's come up over the years we've been doing this, is that you gotta push it. You gotta take it to the max to get those benefits. It doesn't have to be often, but you do have to peg that needle to really get all the bennies. So I think that if you're listening and you're not doing that, this probably is a good opportunity to, think about how you do that safely. How you do that intelligently. And I think that you have a couple of recommendations for listeners if they do want to think about how they can incorporate that in.
Yeah, I'd say consider, first of all, if you have these needs and goals, get a good coach, someone who can help you to test your conditioning level, assess it, where it's at right now, and how does that relate to going forward? What are your goals? And what are the key performance indicators that you can, periodically examine and also build training around? A good coach should be able to help you to design and adjust your programming so it's flexible, it's dynamic, it's personal, specifically to meet your individual beastly needs. And so maybe that's me. If you want to work with me, I take a limited number of folks in one-on-one coaching capacities, but you can hit the coaching icon or menu item, at thelifetimeathlete.com. That might be an option, but there's a lot of good people out there. The other thing is, let's say you just love this concept of athletic fitness and you're like, I want to get into a system that just has me training most of the year, so I'm versatile and durable. I'm an athletic athlete. I can wake up and say, whatever I want to do today, I can probably crush it. And then sometimes it can tune it up or down depending on what your interests are. Well, if that's the case, consider joining the training tribe. When you're in T2, you receive modifiable prescriptions. You get that via document and video format. You get the intensity that you need to produce the goals that we want in the weekly programming, and you have some information available to adapt it to complement your unique body or your sporting goals. So those are some thoughts out there, just a little pitch if anyone wants to get in with what we're doing, to grab a coaching consult or a longer term relationship or a T2 membership. And I would say that intensity, just kind of summing this up, is not to be feared. It is to be understood and ultimately to be appreciated.
We fear that which we do not understand.
that can happen, and ridicule and other things, but that's not really the society that we're trying to create here at TLA. So PK, thank you so much for letting me discuss this topic, and listeners, really appreciate you. If you're really loving the show and the messages are resonating with you, the usual things apply. By all means, if you haven't done it already, leave us a rating and review, share this with someone who you think might benefit from the information, and hey, snag yourself an awesome t-shirt or other swag at thelifetimeathlete.com.
Cheers, everybody.
Peace out.